You know, it seems to me that there's a view that's predominant among human beings about themselves, and it is that we are hopelessly sinful. I don't know how. Where was it when I had that big talk about sin, Carla? Was that in Ashland? Yeah. We're hopelessly sinful. That really is how we see ourselves to be. It's the reason that we have all these stories about sin and the wages of sin and the possibility of escape from sin and so forth. It drives in great part our despising of ourselves. This idea that there's something wrong with us, something really fundamentally wrong with us, that we have within us this almost natural need to be aggressive and hateful and selfish and self-serving, that left to our own devices, well, we would be killing and eating each other, probably. And it is this, isn't this the case? Don't we really feel this way about human beings, that we're all kind of, there's something wrong with us? And it is this idea that there's something wrong with me that leads me in the first place into the spiritual venue, into the spiritual arena, trying to do something about what's wrong with me, trying to fix myself, trying to get enlightened, trying to clarify and wipe out all my wrongfulness, my sinfulness. And of course, this underlying not very hopeful view of the nature of being a human being operates in the whole business that when we hear about the possibility of seeing that we are free, of being finished with all of the striving and effort and hopeless work that we do to try to keep ourselves together, to try to maintain enough control over the way I relate to the world to keep from murdering each other or keep from destroying myself. The way we approach spirituality is founded in that weird idea about how screwed up we are. So, of course, if there is such a thing as enlightenment, it can't be had by the likes of me because I am a sinner. I may by now be far too sophisticated to talk in terms of sinfulness and so forth, but nevertheless, that's as succinct and energetic way of saying the way I see myself to be as we can find. I'm sinful. There's something flawed, something wrong about human nature that something must be done about. And of course, this is what we've been doing for all the time there have been human beings. We have been trying to do something about this essential flaw in human beings, either by killing the ones that don't agree with my idea of what human beings should be like, or preaching to everybody about what I should believe in order that I can finally overcome my sinful nature, or if I get really advanced and I get really into the more esoteric and higher levels of spiritual attainment, how I can gain enlightenment or awakening or self-realization. But that in order to do that, I mean, after all, Bush can't be enlightened, right? Hitler can't be enlightened, right? There are many people who are obviously so flawed and so ignorant of their own worthlessness that the idea of the realization of freedom in this moment is not available to them. And sure to God, I am one of them. I mean, I can maintain this fiction that I'm really a good guy because I know that there are so many other guys that are so much worse than me. But deep down, I know I am one of them. And I know that there's nothing whatsoever that can be done to free me from this yoke of humanity, this yoke of limitation and need and lack, so long as I am as wicked as I am. I know that. So I go for the idea, this being, and this is so obvious, isn't it? It's so obvious that we're screwed up. I mean, really, we take whatever we can get without giving anything back. Doesn't matter how, in a worldly sense, enlightened we are. We still take what we can get. We don't give much back. We put ourselves above everybody else. We really, the only reason I care about the unhappiness of other people is because it creates in me a feeling of uncomfortableness. I don't like it. So I'd like to get rid of that bad feeling. That's the only reason I'd ever do anything to help anybody else, is in order to make me feel better. It's the only reason I believe in God, is in order that I can partake in the hope of salvation. It's the only reason. It's the only reason that I would seek out this profound and final, ultimate breaking open that I have heard is in the nature of realization and enlightenment and awakening. The only reason I seek that out even is so that I can get what I've got coming, so that I can feel better. And I know that. And I know that being motivated by that selfishness and that self-regard, I am hopeless. There's no hope. But I pretend, and I carry on as if I knew what was going on, and I carry on as if I knew what the Buddha was speaking of, or I know what Ramana is speaking of. But really, I know that unless I can rid myself of my sinful nature, I have no hope of the realization of freedom. None. I may delude myself into thinking that realization will free me from my sinfulness, but I know better. I know it's not for me. Not for the likes of me. So most of the time I spend in this lifetime, I spend monitoring and attending to my thoughts and my ideas and my desires and my aversions and my what I want and what I don't want and what that means and whether it means I'm good or it means I'm bad. Oh, well, this is better than being like this is better than being like that, and so forth. That's what I do with most of my time. Monitor myself. Judge myself. Wish I were other than I am. And then, I mean, the truly great ones that have come among us from time to time, they have told us this really incomprehensible. They've made this really incomprehensible claim that already I am awake, that already I am the light of consciousness itself, and that it has nothing whatsoever to do with anything that I'm doing or not doing, with anything that I want or don't want. And that doesn't make any sense to me, because I know, I really know that this is baloney. A sinner cannot reap the harvest of freedom and realization. I know that. Oh, I know what the Buddha says, and I know what Ramana says, and I know what those Zen guys say, and I know what all of the spiritual teachers say, but That's all right for them, but not for me. So I try to fix myself. I know that if I really realized that I was free, absolutely free, I know that what would come of that would be that all of this ugliness that is my sinful nature would have its way. The only thing that keeps it from having its way is my constant supervision of myself, of my behavior, of my actions, of my thoughts. I know that. So I know that if it were to happen that this sense of individual self-consciousness were to disappear into the open sky of realization, that what would remain would be this monster over which there would no longer be any control or any control at all. So I'm screwed. Nothing I can do. Nothing I can get. It's all right for all those other guys, but not me. And even when we get into the less religious, spiritual intuitions and insights, even when we get into that, there remains within us this certainty that I have got to watch closely what I think. I have the only way that I can know the truth of what my state really is by keeping an eye on what I think and what I want and what I don't want. All of this is grounded in this almost second nature of sinfulness that we are so sure of. It's one of those beliefs, like the belief that I am the story of me, that isn't even seen, much less questioned. It's just what I am. That's who I am. A sinner, a hopeless sinner, trying to be good, trying to do right. I know that as I speak with people over these years, I know that, and I'm not exactly certain the specific ways in which it comes up, but I know that there's almost never a time, a meeting that goes by, that somebody doesn't speak to me from a point of view that holds that, yes, I hear you, but what about this? What about this selfishness? What about this long-standing habitual aggression? What about that? Is that going to go away if I know the truth of what I am? What about the ugly way that I treat the people that love me? Is that going to go away merely because I discover the truth of what I am and rid myself of the false belief about what I am? Because that's all there is to it, is getting rid of that false idea. And if I get rid of that, does that mean is all my ugliness, is all my hatefulness, is all my aggression, is all my selfishness, is that going to go away? Well, of course it's not going to go away. I mean, my God, it's just human nature. Right? No. It ain't human nature. Recently, it has become really clear to me that this needs to be said. Human nature is not sinful. Human nature is not aggressive, selfish, needy, lacking, wanting, hating, trying to hold on, trying to control, trying to get rid of. That really is not human nature. not true. The proof of that is that, yes, it is true. When the false belief about what you are vanishes, so too does the impulse to aggression and hatefulness, the ungenerosity. Human nature is generous. It is loving. It is peaceful. It is open-hearted. This is your nature. The foolishness that we involve ourselves in that has to do with getting what I want at the expense of you, that all comes from this false idea about what I am. All of it. Every bit of it. When truth dawns, the entire energetic motive for the aggression and hatefulness and selfishness vanishes. And that's the truth. The only thing that can be done to be finished with the idea that I am sinful and worthless is to discover what I am. The only thing. Nothing else. And in the elimination of that idea comes the elimination of all of the impulse to get at your expense, all of the impulse to be safe when you are at risk, at your expense, all of the impulse to kill off what I don't like, to get rid of what I think is bad. All of the hatefulness goes. Not maybe like that, but it goes. There's no silver bullet that somehow with the transmission of some Shakti pot or some awakened energy or whatever other name it might go by, all of my evil, wicked inclinations are wiped out. The truth is, I have no evil, wicked inclinations. That's the truth. There is no transmission of energy that can make me open-hearted, generous, loving, unselfish. That is my nature. I believe myself to be this story of lack, this story of wanting, this story of limit and neediness and ineffectiveness. But that's a lie. That's not true. I believe myself to be this being that at its very core is hateful. Red in tooth and claw. Would kill and eat anything. But that's not true. I'm not that. I'm not sure why it seems so important to me. It still does seem important to me to get this out in the open. And I'm not sure why. Except for this. Everything that we do in our day-to-day lives with an eye to bettering ourselves is okay. it doesn't cause any harm. Everything we do in our day-to-day lives with an idea, with an eye toward making myself truer or more honest or more open-hearted is okay. It really doesn't do any harm. Everything I do with an eye to becoming more spiritual or more awake or more self-realized or less ignorant or any of that is okay. It really is. It's a fine practice. It doesn't do any harm. Anything I do to try to be more generous and to help people and to give what I have, that's okay. It really doesn't do any harm. But nothing that I do in my day-to-day life can in any way make me anything. Nothing I do, whether good or bad, whether in with good motive or bad motive, nothing that I do in my day-to-day life can make me anything. And therefore, the whole idea that seems to be prevalent in all of the spiritual world, that this practice is good, this practice is bad, that this you should be doing, this you shouldn't be doing, this you can be doing, this you cannot be doing, is a lie. Really. Do what you will. Really. If you can help, help. If you can't, that's okay too. This is all that needs to be done. I swear to God, all that needs to be done is to look right now and see what you are. Not see what kind of a person you are, not see whether you're good or bad, but just see what you are, really. Now, it seems to me that if somebody came along and said to me, "Looky here, John, I know that you are scared of living and scared of dying, and I know that you are confused and twisted up and don't have a clue as to what's going on. I know that you think there are things you need and think that there are things you want and things you have to have and things that cannot happen. I know all of that. But forget about all of that for this, just now, just for this moment. Forget about that whole array, that whole complex of you-ness that is so fraught. Just do this. Just touch your finger to your nose. Just that. And then the next time you think about it, just touch your finger to your nose again. Just that. And again, if you will do that, everything will come out right. Now, somebody came to me and said that, I would say, "Well, you're crazy, but I'm going to do it." Right? I mean, it doesn't cost me anything to touch my finger to my nose. I don't even have to do it in public. I can do it in the privacy of the bathroom. Right? Don't try to fix yourself. I mean, or do try to fix yourself. It's okay. Keep trying to work on your personality. Keep trying to work on your physical situation and your material well-being. Keep trying to get yourself away from being a sinner. But while you're doing that, every once in a while, just stop for a second and put your finger on your nose. And all will be well. All will be taken care of. You won't have a clue as to how that transpires, but all will be taken care of. Well, that's the simplicity of Ramana's self-inquiry. It says, he says to us, all that you're doing is neither good nor bad. You can keep on doing everything you're doing. Keep on doing your pranayama, keep on doing your therapy, keep on doing the Enneagram, keep on doing, oh, I don't know, selling drugs, getting rich, foreclosing on people's mortgages. Keep all that up, keep doing that. But just every once in a while, stop for just 1 second and see if you cannot put your attention on what it feels like to be. Now that's as easy as touching your finger to your nose, really. We have made a big old deal out of it because, well, we make a big old deal out of everything. But it's as easy as touching your finger to your nose. Just whenever you think about it, in the midst of all the other stuff that's really important that has to be taken care of because you are such a sinner and because you are so flawed and because you really have to be very careful about everything you're doing in order to ensure that you don't sacrifice your hope of heaven and salvation. Keep on doing all that. Just do this once in a while. Cost you nothing. It's not a problem. Just stop for 1 second. Am I here? Yes, I am here. What is it to be here? What's that feel like? Don't make anything spiritual about it. Really. Just what's it feel like to be here? It's hard not to make anything spiritual about this because we have taken every word and every phrase and every method of speaking about these things and turned them into big old spiritual deals. If I say here, that's spiritual. Ah, here, here and now. Ah, I get it. Just in the moment of stopping for just 1 second to see what it feels like to be here. Forget about the spiritual ideas that are associated with that. You are here. You are always here. You can never deny that you are here. Why is that? What is it about your present experience that is so, that is such a certainty that you are? Now, there is no more a rational and explainable cause and effect chain that leads from the direct attention resting in the reality of being here and the washing away of all the trouble in life over time than there would be between touching my finger to my nose and the washing away of all the trouble in life over time. But I tell you that that's all that's required. Just that. And if you will do this, no matter how hard you try to stay miserable, you will find it impossible to do so, finally. No matter how hard you try to hold on to the desperate belief that you are limited, lacking, needy, wanting individuals, you will find it impossible to do so. If only you will, just whenever it occurs to you, stop for 1 second and see what it feels like to be directly. Now, that's it. That's all I got to say. I'm probably lying. I generally can't be shut up quite that easy. But I'm willing for it to be all I have to say. it would be much easier to talk about my own in darkening. I have never, ever not been awake. There has never been a time. Huh? There's never been a time when I have not been, when I have not realized the reality of what I am. How could that be? All we can talk about, Joellen, really, we cannot talk about what is real, because you are what is real, and you are never absent. If we start talking about what it feels like to get real, then we're talking about a lie, because I have never not been real. What we can talk about is what it's like to be caught in the delusion that I am this story. And part of the delusion that I am this story, often in spiritual circles, is the storyline about how once I was not in this story. Once there was a time when there was this experience of awakening and opening and so forth. But that's part of the same story of me as a story. It's a delusion. It is a delusion. The idea that you are asleep is a delusion. The idea that you can awake is a delusion. You are here. That's all. You are here. Are you not? There's nothing else than that. And that has never been absent. There's nothing else than that. All the rest is story. That's right. We can talk about the hard work that we do trying to get free of this false idea about what I am. We can talk about that, but that's a delusion too. Nothing of the kind is happening. Nothing. I am here. There is nothing other than that. And then, who cares about the story? It's not that the story's bad. You know, that's one of the things that we come to cherish in spiritual circles, is the story's bad. There's something wrong with having a story, for God's sake. Much less the kind of story it is. It's wrong to have a story. It's wrong ever to have believed myself to be a story. It's wrong. We got to wipe out the mind. That's what we got to do. Wipe out the mind. Do away with thought. We don't have to do anything. I swear to God. Just see what you are. And everything will become clear. And you know this. You know it. Nothing will ever make the story make sense. Really. So we don't try to fix the story. We don't try to make it go away. We don't try to turn it into something else. It's just, you're here. You're here. There's nothing more than that. You're here. Sasha, you got to come up. Come. See, that's what happens, right? I mean, and all this stuff is perfectly understandable. It really is. It's perfectly understandable. It's perfectly justifiable. It's perfectly rational and so forth that we would believe these things and that they would drive us crazy in the way they do. But so what? My God, are you making notes, Sasha?
Yes. I made notes.
Okay.
Do you want me to read them?
You can read them or not, but I want you to tell me why you're here. Okay.
Okay. My issue is, how do I deal with evil and harm that was done to me? I'm trying to be in a place of love, compassion, and forgiveness, but I find myself also going into fear, anger, and resentment, and wanting to do something. And all the books that I've been reading say, you know, you have to do something. Okay, these are not spiritual books. These are, you know, books by like Dr. Laura Schlesinger and people like that. And they all say, you know, you've got to do something.
And
the spiritual teacher is all, you know, I was doing that.
They say you got to do something too.
Running away. I was basically running away. Yeah. And not doing anything and just avoiding the situation and being out of this country and not thinking about it or dealing with it or dealing with this person. So that's basically the issue.
So, okay, but why is it an issue exactly?
Why is it
so
an issue?
So do something.
Pardon?
So do what you need to do.
So should I get a lawyer and threaten to sue them if they
don't? I'm not qualified to say that, Sasha. I'm not qualified to tell you how you should do whatever it is that you have to do within the story of Sasha, but I will encourage you to do whatever you're called upon to do. That's not my area.
Well, then the whole thing just, you know, takes me into the story, into the drama.
So?
And so is that...
No,
is that
you see,
okay?
Listen.
Is that okay
yes,
to go there
okay.
and do that?
No, of course
when
it's okay.
You know?
I mean, if it's not okay.
I mean, how do you know when you should do that and when you should just like detach?
Sasha, listen. The reason you think it might not be okay is because you know you're a sinner.
I don't think so.
Well,
I don't think so. No, it's more like fear. It's kind of like, you know,
what do you
if you're
fear?
Facing O.J.
And what do you fear?
No, it's more like if you're facing O.J. Simpson and, you know, he's got $10 million and will hire 10 lawyers and you don't, then are you going to, you know, be like David and tackle Goliath when you don't feel like you have enough stones in your slingshot? And maybe you shouldn't even do it because then you're just getting into the battle with which is what they want you to get into so they can win.
Can you hear how crazy this is? No, I'm serious. Can you hear how crazy this is?
What's crazy?
What you're just telling me. Maybe this, maybe that. How do you know? What do I do? Where do I go? Maybe I'm going to get killed. Maybe I'm not going to get killed. Maybe I'll do the right thing. Maybe. How do I tell? Can you hear how crazy that is?
No, I don't see that's crazy. I see that's reality. Do you perceive this as crazy?
What I think is crazy is you're agonizing over it.
No, I'm just faced with making this decision.
And
I'm not agonizing about it. It comes up intermittently. Mostly I run away from it and avoid it.
Okay. Make the decision. Really, make the decision. I can't help you with that. I don't even know what you're talking about, so I can't possibly help you with that. Even if I did know what you were talking about, I don't know anything that I could tell you that would be of use to you. Except this. Make the decision. Use whatever means that are at hand to make the right decision and make the decision and act on it. Okay?
Okay.
Okay.
So what's crazy about this? Why did you say...
What's crazy about it is your insistence that you have to make this decision. You have to do something about this. You have to know what you should do and what you shouldn't do. Well, so? Make it. Do. Act.
I'm in the process of trying to find out what is the right thing to do.
Well, I can't help
you with
that.
Why did you say that's crazy? I don't think it's crazy. I think it's like the normal process people go through if they have to
figure out
how to act in a situation. So I want to know why you said that's crazy.
Okay, because I'm wrong. Find out what the right thing to do is and do it. Okay? No, I really don't have any problem with it. Find out what the right thing to do is and do it. But now, having settled that, right? What's at stake here?
good versus evil?
What's at stake here for you?
Standing up for truth and risking being abused, attacked for doing that?
You've been abused and attacked in the past.
Yes.
It is the abuse and attacks in the past that you're seeking to redress now, right?
Yes.
What will you get if you are successful in redressing these abuses and attacks in the past?
I'm not sure if...
But you see, this is what you have to see.
If I would get justice, you know, I mean, if I went legal route, I might get justice. But whether I would actually feel, you know... I mean, it's like, why does anybody go to court when they've been wronged?
Well,
why
does
anybody go? For vindication, for standing for what's right.
Okay, wait a minute.
That's what I might get from it, maybe.
Stop. Okay, vindication you might
get,
right? And what will vindication give you? How will you be affected one way or the other, whether you get vindication or don't get vindication? What will you get from it, really? This seems to me to be a pretty fundamental thing to consider in the whole process of figuring out what you should do and what you shouldn't do.
Well, what I might get from it is a lot of money, which would be nice, and use it. I might get a lot of money, which I could use, and which would be nice.
Okay, now money is different than vindication, but still there's something similar about getting money and getting vindication.
Mm-hmm.
It's like vindication will cause me to have some internal change. But so will money. It'll make something change about my reality. What is that change? What will money give you? What will vindication give you?
I don't know that that would really change anything.
I'm sorry?
I don't know that that would really change anything in terms of my reality.
This is excellent.
Who I am. And my peace or lack of peace, I don't really think that that would make any difference.
I don't either. Now, seeing that, can you see how much easier it is to act one way or the other? If you see truly...
No, I don't see.
Why not?
Because...
I mean, if there's nothing...
Because then I don't know, well, should I act one way or the other?
But if there's nothing at stake, truly...
Well, there is something at stake, truth, integrity, being...
And what is that?
Honored in
what
in
do you get
that.
From that?
What do I get from it?
Yeah. What's the difference between Sasha, who is acting on truth and integrity to try to vindicate past harm, and Sasha, who is scared and lonely and afraid and not wanting to present herself at all? What is the difference? Why do you prefer one over the other?
Well, one seems courageous and one seems fearful.
To whom?
To me.
And who is that? Not the one who is fearful or fearless.
Right.
See?
Right.
So that's what I'm here for.
So it doesn't matter what I do or don't do.
If I say it doesn't matter, that won't... The only reason I would say it doesn't matter is if I wanted you to believe it doesn't matter. And that's not the case. I have no preference whatsoever for the beliefs that come and go within you. My preference as regards you is that you see clearly, as you did just a second ago, what's really what I am, really. That's all. So...
Well, it's really difficult because it's like in a way, whatever I do or don't do changes nothing that's really, really fundamentally important.
Yes, that's
but on
right.
the other hand, if Gandhi did nothing, then the British would still be, you know,
right.
ruling
so therefore,
India.
Therefore, on the other
and
hand...
And what he did was important.
On the other hand, well, on the, you know, all action has a chain of unintended consequence that we cannot foresee or even, in retrospect, uncover. So saying that this action is good action, that action is bad action, is really just a, you know, a invitation into a philosophical swamp. But I will accept what you're saying, that it's true, that if you act on the on your perception of serving what's true and just, that that'll be a good thing. So do so. I mean, really, do so. You know from your own experience that there's nothing for you to get from any of it and nothing for you to lose in any of it. So do what you think is right. What's so hard? The thing that will eliminate fearfulness from this equation is the constant returning back to the reality of what you are, because you are free of fear. And that eliminates the fearfulness in it.
There's a lot of fear because it's standing up to someone who threatened to kill me.
Yes, so. That's right. And it's the animal would be good to be fearful of that. But see that here, right here, there is no fear. And in seeing that there's nothing whatsoever for you to get or to lose in this, really, really, then the decision becomes much easier as to what you do, because it's no longer driven by the idea that I am at stake here, that there's something, you know, like about me that's on the line here. Just do what you see to be right. Yeah. And it may be that what you see to be right is to not take on the powers that be. I mean, and it may be that what you see to be right is. So what?
And what about the fear that I'll be killed?
Huh?
What about the fear that I'll be killed if I stand up?
You may not want to stand up then. I mean, it would be rational not to, wouldn't it? If there is a real possibility of you being physically harmed or killed as a result of taking some action like this, then you may well be well advised not to take that action. It doesn't mean anything about you. It doesn't mean you're good or bad. I tell you what's true heroism. The true hero is the one who, despite all of the voluptuous and temptation to believe in the story, stops in this moment and says, what am I? Not to get rid of the story, but to see the truth. What am I? That's the hero. That's the hero. Not the one that goes running into a machine gun nest with a water pistol. See this, Sasha. When you can, stop as you did just here with me and see the truth of what you are. See that you are not touched or touchable. And whatever you do from there will be true. I promise. And then do it. Don't agonize about it. Especially don't agonize. This is not your failing, but it is the failing of many. Don't agonize about the fact that it's unspiritual to do something. Just do what you do. Do the best you can.
But Isha said there's no point in standing up to a machine gun if you have a water pistol. So if you have one lawyer and they have 10 of the best ones in the country, maybe there's no point in standing up.
Maybe not, but I don't know enough about the details to have a good sense of what all that is. But you know, I mean, as you're sitting here, I'm certain that you already know exactly what your course will be. I'm certain of it. You may have all kinds of weird ideas about what you should do or how it shouldn't be, but you already know what you're going to do. You may deny that you do, but you do.
I'm glad you think I do.
I'm sure you do.
Because I don't know in this moment.
I know. But I'm sure that you...
I am
absolutely certain of is that you do not need to agonize about this. That I'm certain of. That the whole idea that we can, by force of will and by some, force of will, that we can, ahead of time, figure out what we should do, what we should say, how we should be, where we should go, who we should stand up to, who we should not stand up to, that whole idea is false. All action is spontaneous in the moment. All action. And all of the stuff that in which I try to figure out what I should... Well, wait a minute, but all that's unnecessary. It's unnecessary suffering. Know what you are and do what comes to you to do in the moment and all will be well. Know what you are and do the opposite of what comes to you in the moment and all will still be well. You hear that?
I don't understand.
Don't have to.
I mean, whatever I do, it doesn't matter.
No, that's not what I mean. What I mean is, know what you are. First, before all things, during all things, after all things, know what you are, and everything will be all right. That's what I mean.
So it's not so important what I do or don't do.
It's not what?
It's not so important what I do or don't do.
And that's not what I'm saying either.
Just know
what
I am.
Know what you are. And quite to the contrary, I think that what you do and don't do is very important. I just don't think that it is up to you in the way that you think it is.
Probably not.
Know what you are. And you know that. It's just like putting your finger on your nose. It's not hard. Okay.
I don't get that, how easy it is.
Yes, you do. You don't get how easy it is when you start talking about it and thinking about it. You get how easy it is in the moments when you and I have met and you have stopped for just a second and said, how could it be hard? You're here. I mean,
it's not hard to know who I am, but it's hard to know what to do.
But that's what I'm telling you. It's impossible to know what to do. It's not hard. It's impossible to know what to do. What's hard is trying to pretend or trying to work ourselves up into this state where what we're going to do and how it's going to happen is important now. That's hard. That's all the hardness of it. It's impossible for you to know what you should do. But what is not only possible but unavoidable is to know what you are. Stick with what you know. And everything else will take care of itself.
Okay.
Swear to God. Cross my heart. Hope to die.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
Okay.
We'll see. Thanks.
And it includes all of the agonizing, you know? That's all what you're doing. The agonizing is part of what you're doing. Don't worry about it. Stick with what you know.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. I don't know why this is, I don't know why we do this, but whenever we get around spiritual stuff, right away everything is hard. You know, I mean, really, it's hard. Hard. How can it be easy? I mean, for God's sake, man. For the love of God, man. People have been trying to get this for 5,000 years, and nobody's getting it except, well, the Buddha and, you know, a couple other guys. Ramana, maybe, and Papaji. But nobody's getting it. How can it be easy? I work hard. I'm hard working. I work nights, work weekends trying to get it. What else? Anything else, Lawrence?
I hear what you're saying, and I feel like I just want to encourage you, because I think when I feel your message, you know, when I kind of get it, it's. I think it's a very important message.
I think so too.
I feel like I was, you know, of course, like you say, the whole journey was a whole big epic thing, you know, ooh, very spiritual, you know, big things. I was very sinful, and I was an alcoholic, and when you just said this, I just remember that even when I would be, you know, sitting in a parking lot at, waking up in a parking lot of the VFW, you know, feeling like hell, really worthless and really bad, I was still watching myself suffer.
Mm-hmm.
I was the one that was just, it's too simple. Oh, the idea that I was always there, though, I must thought, you know, that watcher or whatever you want to call it, my awareness was just letting me, it will never stop me from believing in this story. It doesn't make me stop.
No.
And it goes through, and where the story's at now, through all this striving to get spiritual, it just watches that too.
That's right.
You know? Yeah,
and that's right.
I got to the point in my journey here where there's really nothing else to do because, except, you know, stop, just leave it.
That's right. Just put your finger on your nose.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, that's all.
But what I feel is the, you know, from the few months I've come to some of your different things, I've watched a movement in me where I'm reminded to, it seems very slow that to remember to put my finger, you know, to, I can still spend the whole day, you know, busy maintaining the story and being a good person and working hard and all, what my current story.
And is anyone harmed by that?
No.
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 Of course not. Is anyone harmed if you think you're a sinner?
No.
No. Is anyone harmed if you think you're a spiritual seeker who's on the right track or not on the right track? No. There you are.
I'm really curious what keeps, with where I'm at, why I choose to, the momentum of the story seems to kind of fade in and out. You know, I do meditate in the morning and, you know, And I just, you know, maybe I am getting like you say, it's this, you don't see it coming kind of. It's
That's right.
A slow shift or...
That's right. We're looking for the final solution, right? We're looking for this magic bullet.
The big
that, and we know what it's going to feel like, right? We know, right? We've had enough experiences and drugs and spiritual meetings and so forth to know what it's going to feel like. It's going to... Oh, everything's going to be right. It's going to be heaven. Of course, and you know, if there's... This is the thing I really have a difficult time understanding about us. Us human beings who have stumbled on the spiritual, on the idea of spiritual attainment, is that we all know, I mean, you can't be in this business for very long before you have run through all of the literature and all of the high-level teachings and so forth. And we all know that what the real deal ones have told us is that, well, you already are what you're seeking. We all know that. We've all heard that. So what's really hard for me to get is why... Yeah, right, that's true. But it can't be what... It can't mean what it seems to mean. It can't mean that. It must mean that... Well, God, I don't know what it means, but it means something really mystical and special and explosive and godlike, and it can't mean that it's just me. Just this. Can't mean that. So I'm get busy working on myself.
Well, can't mean. I don't see, you know, the sinner thing, I don't have that, but the slight worth, not worthy of, because God is so spiritual that what entering into allowing myself to be my divine self, it, I think what's happening is I made everything is it's so spiritual and so, you know, God and everything's up here, and it is. I wouldn't say sinfulness didn't register with me, but to be worthy, to be, you know, like a saint, to be, you know, to become God conscious or whatever. It's like that's there's a deep part of me that's, you know, that's like you know, like impossible. It's like blasphemy.
It is. Well, and you see, here's the trick. It is impossible.
Because I'm saying I'm the same as God, then. And God is
yes,
huge.
I know.
God is
but,
very spiritual.
But you see, here's the trick. The deep abiding certainty that it's impossible is true. It is impossible. That's
for
true.
Me that
now, the story about why it's impossible, that's just baloney. It's just a story. It is impossible. You are God consciousness. You have never been other than that. It is impossible for you to become what you are. Can you see that? It is impossible for you to become what you are. Impossible for you to become what you are.
You know, we say that about...
And then comes the story, right? Well, yes, because I'm not God consciousness, because I'm not worthy, because I'm this, or because I don't see everything, or because I'm not omnipresent, or I'm not omniscient, or I'm... Who says you're not? Who says you're not? That's the story. The true insight is that it's impossible. And if we could just hear that and stop trying to make possible what's impossible, that might be enough too.
Yeah, the first, you know, 20, you know, in the 60s when it all happened, then the first waves of the New Age, people were saying, you know, I'm God and stuff, and they were taking these deep teachings, and I don't know if they were just thinking that they had them or whatever, and it was like silly.
Yeah.
But now it's coming.
They were saying, I'm God, but you're not, yeah. Is what they were saying, really.
But now...
Why don't you get to be God too, man, and then everything would be okay.
Yes.
It still feels very strange for me to, even with my own, even within my own mind or in front of another person or a little group, to admit or to proclaim the truth of who I am, because all of the energy of the whole humanity is that I'm not allowed to do that.
That's
at least
right.
From my culture, from a fundamentalist Christian background, that is saying I'm like Jesus was.
Yes.
And he's the only one that was like that. So to be of equal of that is like, well, that's the end of the line, you know, buddy.
The thing that I would like you to say in this regard is that proclaiming yourself to be anything other than here is a lie. If I say, I am God, I blaspheme. Not because I am separate from God, or God is something apart from me, but for the same reason that it has always been in most religious, true religious traditions, it has always been forbidden to name God. I am here. I can find nothing other than this here that I am. I am here. I can say no more than that. And even saying that is saying more than I am. It is putting story on what is utterly free of story. There is no story that you can tell about yourself that is true. Really. It doesn't matter how vast or subtle or in keeping with spiritual reality you might make it. There is no story you can tell about yourself that is true. None. It is all something more to believe in rather than to know what I am. So, if you say, I am God, the next word out of your mouth has to be, you are nothing.
No, everything is God. Everything and nothing. But
are you here?
Yes.
Is there anything else that you know for certain?
No.
Yeah. Stick with what you know. That's the whole of it. And that's enough. Okay, I guess we're done. I guess we're out of time. I wish I could say this better. I wish there was some way that I could say less than I say, that I could evoke in everyone the fact that, you know, we say you already are that. You already are what you seek. And then we say, we who receive that claim say, okay, now how do I get to knowing that I am that? But you already know that you are that. There's nothing you can do to get to know that. You already know. In fact, there's nothing about you other than that knowing. That's all there is to you. You are here. You know it. Anything else is too much. It is so simple. It is so simple to rid yourself of the false idea but not by arguing yourself out of the false idea. That's just more of the same. You rid yourself of the false idea by resting in reality, which is here, which you are, which is all that you know. You don't rid yourself of the story. You don't rid yourself of the consequences of your actions. You don't rid yourself of the history or the future or any of that. But you rid yourself of the false idea that that's you. I am here. Okay. Thank you for this satsang. I am always so grateful to meet with you in truth. Willing to toss away all the holiness that veils our eyes from the true sacred reality that we are. Thank you for satsang. Om Shanti.